This is All of It. I'm Tiffany Hansen in for Allison Stewart. In one of the opening scenes of the new thriller Femme, Aphrodite Banks wears a purple satin gown and a diamond-encrusted halter top. She struts to the center stage as this techno beat blasts from the club's sound system. You got me feeling like a movie star. Aphrodite is the drag persona of Jules, a young man, and the protagonist. One night after Jules' drag performance, he notices Preston, a closeted man giving him the eye outside the club. Without giving too much away, Preston ends up violently attacking Jules, leaving him scarred, injured months later. Jules encounters Preston again, this time at a gay sauna, intent on revenge. Jules begins an intimate relationship with him. The revenge plot isn't so clear-cut. It's complicated by their mutual attraction. The Guardian called Femme, quote, an outstandingly intense psychodrama. It's out this Friday at IFC Center. With us now to talk about it is the film's director, Sam Freeman. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
And Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who plays Jules. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
That scene that we just listened to, I loved that scene. I'm just going to like fangirl for a second. Okay, Sam, we'll start with you. Okay. Femme was originally a short film. Mm-hmm. It received a lot of buzz. I'm curious what you saw in the short film that you said that is really going to make a great feature.
Mm. We set out actually originally to make a feature film. Ping and I, my co-director, we have been friends for a long time and we've been living together and we're having this real kick of watching these kind of neo-noir kind of late night thrillers, stuff by the Safdie brothers, kind of classic Scorsese films. And we're having a conversation about how we loved the genre and we loved the films, but also as queer artists sort of felt kind of excluded from the area. Mm. You know, these films are filled with a very particular kind of sort of hyper masculinity that, and queer characters sort of don't center in them. Don't, if they are, they're often to the side or they're there for comic relief.
The thriller genre.
Yeah. And it's a very certain kind of thriller. And originally the seed of the idea was that we just wanted to flip it. And so we wanted to make a feature film, but neither Ping nor I had ever made film before. And so a short, became our way to kind of prove that we could direct. Through making this short, we kind of discovered this sort of central relationship between these two men who are both struggling, I suppose, or dealing with their relationship to their gender, their sexuality, their masculinity in different ways, and what happens when they sort of are mm-hmm. headed on a kind of collision course with each other.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, specifically, was it the overall story, the idea that you're going to sort of bump up against this, intentionally bump up against this genre, of thriller, or was it your character? What was it? Was it the character? Was it all of it?
It was pretty much all of it. It was really the script. I think, you know, I get a lot of scripts. I see a lot of scripts. I have a lot of meetings. And I just thought the script was so economic, so tight and classical, in a sense, of these two characters on a trajectory of tragedy. And I just thought the character, there was, you know, playing Jules is basically playing four different characters. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, as an actor, it's an absolute gift of a role to be able to play someone that dynamic, that nuanced, and opposite another character who's equally as nuanced. So it really was the script, you know, that you've written, and you're sitting right next to me,
but you've
written a very tight and wonderful script with just so much depth and so much to play with. So that, for me, every film, the skeleton, the genesis, the X is always the script, and it starts from there. Everything starts from there.
The character, your character, is complex. Preston's character, extremely complex. It makes for pretty muddy waters in terms of what each of these characters brings to the table in terms of their relationship. I guess it may be a question for both of you, but Sam, how is it to write that? That seems like a very tall order.
And I think that's why we wanted to do it. You know, I think we were really clear at the beginning that we weren't setting out to make a kind of sort of black and white, overly moralistic movie. We wanted to put two very human characters on the screen in a really sort of murky, difficult situation and explore what happens. And I think, you know, I like to think it's a very human film. And I we weren't interested in sort of making things like, here's a good guy, here's a bad guy. Like, right. You get, you know, there's this.
But isn't that sort of the trope you get a lot of times in the quote-unquote revenge thriller? But
that's why it's exciting, mm-hmm. too. Yeah. I think the film is not interested in binaries in any sense. No. Really, that about binaries of kind of gender or sexuality or ideas like hero and villain. And I think the revenge thriller is a very binary genre. You're right. It is often very sort of like the good guy gets, you know, an eye for an eye. The good guy gets their reward and the bad guy gets their comeuppance. And I think it felt exciting to take that genre and do something difficult with it.
Yeah, I think that you, in a sense, you... Because you always say you kind of upended a genre, but I think within that, in terms of like the archetype of good person, bad person, I think you kind of usurped that as well. You really kind of did something in terms of what we think of a moral or moralistic person or something, anything like that. These real big pillars, and you actually said, "Well, no, how about we turn it around?" I think that was the power of the film, the power of the piece is that you do that and you pose those questions. Mm-hmm. And I've said it a few times. I think the film is amazing, but I also think it's good because it poses questions and it doesn't answer any of them. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it really powerful, I think.
For me, yeah. And for me, that's really, I think all the best stories ask questions. They pose questions rather than making statements of like, mm-hmm. this is what the world is. I think they ask challenging questions, hopefully in a really like emotionally engaging, sometimes entertaining, sometimes, you know, difficult way. But that you come out feeling emotionally engaged and you think about it the next day and it stays with you. And so those questions stay with you, I suppose.
There's a way to do that, though, isn't there, that doesn't leave people going, well, I don't know what that was about.
No, and hopefully that's also not what the film does. I think, you know, I think that's good storytelling.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I think the movie is very clear what it's about. I think, you know, you're following, you know who the characters are, and you really, you know, the plot is it really leads it. And that's what's good to play with these kind of genres as well, is that you can carry really tricky questions on something that is also like viscerally and emotionally engaging for an audience.
Yeah, I do love a degree of ambiguity. I mean, I think that the film carries that. And again, I think that's what's very powerful. And if you think about like films like Anatomy of a Fall, like it's ambiguous to a fault. And I think it's a very powerful film. So I like that there's a degree of, I don't know, maybe there's, you know, it's the audience actually does some work and audiences are so, so smart. So I think kind of just feeding them things is not always a good idea. I love ambiguity. Mm.
We talk about how the film is distinctly non-binary, mm-hmm. but would you, again, probably a question for both of you, would you describe the relationship, Nathan, between your character Jules mm-hmm. and Preston, who is the person that your character gets involved with, as a love, it's a binary, love-hate relationship? I mean, it's very simplistic, but I guess what I'm getting at is if something is a love-hate relationship, it does feel sort of inherently ambiguous.
Yes, I know what you mean. I wouldn't have said I thought it was a love-hate relationship. I do think it's, in a sense, of some kind of twisted love story. I think that... Jules is compromised in his pure hatred towards Preston. So... probably yes. I think that probably my answer to your question is yes, but I wouldn't have phrased it like that. But yeah, I think definitely.
You have anything to say on that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the relationship goes on a real journey, doesn't it? There's a big arc there. And I think, you know, what happens to Jules in the beginning in that attack, and we talked a lot about the idea of drag when we were making the film. Obviously, Jules is a drag queen.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next, so
all
great.
Right,
yeah.
Okay, well, I can lead into it,
please,
I suppose.
Please do.
But Jules is stripped of that drag by Preston at the beginning, and a lot of Jules's power, personal power, it lies with that drag. It's where he's found his identity, and so that his identity is kind of stripped from the beginning of the film. And actually, outside of the kind of plot mechanics and the specifics, his revenge that he wants to take on Preston is really from a desire to strip Preston's drag from him. We talked a lot about Preston being, in a way, a kind of drag king. He wears a form of kind of, like, sort of quite toxic hyper-masculinity,
right,
as a way to kind of protect himself. But the thing is, I suppose, as Jules starts to strip these layers of drag from Preston over the course of the film, it reveals something more nuanced and more human and more damaged underneath. And that then affects the way that Jules feels about Preston and also feels about the act of revenge that he is trying to...
In that sense, the drag is the self.
Yeah.
So let's imagine a world where it's impossible, right? Where Jules is not a drag artist. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting at is how does that, we know how it now affects their relationship, but how does it make the story overall richer to have that character as a drag artist?
I think it operates, I think, for us on two levels. There is, as I said, the kind of thematic idea that this is a film about identity and about gender, and drag really at its core is a performance of identity and of gender. So the film is about how we perform ourselves and how we choose performances that give us safety, that give us power, and what happens when those performances are stripped from us, what's underneath,
what we're does all that performing. Do to us?
I think so. I think I'm performing right now.
Yeah, oh my God, right. You very well. Yeah.
it really sat at the core of the conversations when we were making the film, when we were talking, you know, with Nathan, with all of the actors. There's that RuPaul, that very famous RuPaul quote, "We're all born naked and the rest is drag," which sort of kind of, in a way, sort of sits like,
yeah, and
with this,
the Shakespeare quote with "the world is a stage."
Absolutely. Shakespeare and RuPaul. That's where
I think that's where you were aiming, actually.
Yeah, that's what we were aiming.
I like it. I see that on the poster, baby. Yeah, right? Yeah. It's RuPaul meets Shakespeare. So, Nathan, I'm curious how Aphrodite helps Jules on the journey.
From my understanding, really, drag is an expression, so you can say it's an expression of someone's interior, and I think that Aphrodite is Jules at his most empowered, his most celebratory, and gives Jules license and a voice to do things and say things that Jules is unable to kind of reconcile out of drag. And I think when you are feeling your most powerful in those moments, and you know, it's Jules' birthday, there's lots of different things that, you know, again, it's very classical. I think you started it in a very classical way of like the height of someone's power. To rip that from someone at that time is the most painful, is the most awful thing to do.
Go ahead.
Just on the drag, I suppose the other thing of your question, I suppose the other thing is that drag, I guess it also plays a very important plot. It's an important plot device within the film, because it's also the reason why Preston doesn't recognize Jules when he meets him again.
Right.
Which is also quite Shakespearean.
It's very Shakespearean.
It is. Yeah. Somebody can write their dissertation on this. Let's hear from Aphrodite. This is Jules and Preston continuing their secret affair. We find Jules in a bathtub, friends by his side, consoling him. Let's take a listen.
No, she was just so powerful. It's not just confusing. It was like she was the real me, and I was the performance. After, you know. It was like I wasn't. It's like I wasn't worth that anymore. I could let her down.
You didn't let anyone down, babe.
Nathan, talk about that crisis that's happening there, first of all. Can I give you a two-part question?
Yeah, I'll attempt to answer.
Okay, and then the second part is the voice we heard there at the end is a member of Jules' chosen family.
Yes.
So, tell us about both of those.
It's funny because at the moment I have an issue where I can't remember the film as an actor. I can remember George, I can remember yourself, Sam, and I remember different things, but I can't remember myself performing anything. I almost remember it as if it were real. And I think that at its height, performance, you can meld this. You bring a lot of yourself to something, and you lend a lot of yourself to something, and you also learn, and you are informed by that character. I think Jules, in that instance, is saying that he feels whole as Aphrodite. He feels that, you know, if you look at Paris is Burning, a lot of kids in the ballroom were living the life that they wanted to live. They'd grown into that life. And I think he feels really whole as Aphrodite and hasn't honored her by not doing enough since the attack. I think it's a really common thing, actually, to go somewhere else. I think it's really common. Second part, Tiffany, give me the second part again.
Chosen family.
Again, so I think it's very, very common. I think in queer society, oftentimes, if you think about kids that have run away from home, have bad home lives, or work lives, whatever that would be, that they choose their family out of necessity. They choose who will love, who accept them, who will take care of them. And it's incredibly important, as I think it is to Jules, that we had a few scenes that I don't think actually made it into the film, unfortunately, but they're really to show how important chosen family is. I think we all do it in many different ways.
Can you give me a quick answer for this question, Sam? Here, the clock is ticking. Mm-hmm. What do you hope queer audiences will take from this film?
I hope that... I hope, in a way, also, I hope that queer audiences feel like we are expanding kind of the canon of queer film. I've talked to a lot of people who've really felt like sort of queer thrillers have been something that we haven't seen a lot of, that actually, like, sort of queer film sits within a genre of its own, and sometimes we feel that we're sort of kept within a box. And I think, you know... There are some films coming out at the moment that sort of stand alongside us, like Love Lies Bleeding, and there's a really kind of... It's an exciting time to expand the kind of stories that we are allowed to tell as queer artists.
Rotting in the Sun as well. Rotting in the Sun came out last year. It's amazing.
We've been talking with Sam Freeman, co-director of the new film... Femme. See, I keep wanting to do that. Femme, thank you. And Nathan Stewart Jarrett, who plays Jules, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. Coming up tomorrow on All of It, a conversation about food. It's our food for thought. We'll talk with Anna Gass, author of a new cookbook, Italian Snacking. Snacking on All of It tomorrow. Join us for that.